My name is Michael Bailey, and you're listening to the EDP Formula One podcast.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the EDP Formula One podcast. My name is Michael Bailey. I have Kyle Cumbers here and Stephen Russ with me tonight to talk through the Canadian Grand Prix. Kyle, are you well?
I'm very well. Are you?
I'm very well. I much enjoyed the muchness of the race, of the racing weekend. It was a lot of fun. Now, Mr. Rust, you're back in the country.
I certainly am, yes.
You've been on your travels.
Yeah, 3 weeks away out of the country.
Where were you?
I was in America for 3 weeks.
And coast to coast. Coast to coast, yeah. Which is how many miles?
6,000 miles I covered.
6,000 miles. Wow. Best bit?
Probably New York, Chicago, something like that would be my best bits. Yeah.
New York is a brilliant city, isn't it?
Cheers.
Never been.
Get yourself there, Kyle. Get yourself there. We're going to be joined by Perry Hamilton in a few moments. He's just running late, he said.
Okay.
So that's always exciting. In the meantime, let's get on with the conversation, shall we? What a race it was in Canada. Is that the best race of the season so far, do we think?
It's a tough one between that and Bahrain. Was quite good, wasn't it?
Bahrain was good. I'm not sure if it was as good. So that would be my opinion.
It's difficult. I think it was the best one in one reason, but Bahrain was the better one for another. Because Bahrain was just close racing towards the end, and it was going to be one or the two. Whereas this was a bit of a lottery, you know. But it was a kind of a different kind of race. But, I mean, for me, I thought it was probably the worst race I've watched.
Really?
That's down to who I follow. But for the viewers, as a general race, probably one of the best.
The old subjective viewing.
Yeah.
I think if Hamilton finished and that, still had the problems the Mercedes obviously had, and him competing with Rosberg with the rest of the pack catching up, I probably would have been definitely the best race of the season.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
But yeah, it was pretty good anyway.
Well, it wasn't bad. I suppose it's interesting that it takes massive brake failure for the Mercedes to be back in the pack, doesn't it, really? But the great news, I suppose, is that Canada is back for another 10 years, yeah. I think. That's a big deal, isn't it?
It's always been a good race. It's always produced interesting results. Carnage, generally always safety cars with it, of course. It's great. I think it's better than places that we used to have on the calendar. Like Valencia, I'm thinking.
There's a few of them.
Yeah.
There's a few of them. All right, well, let's start with the race winner, shall we? Daniel Ricciardo, which I will stubbornly continue to call him. A superb drive. I mean, the best bit for me is the fact that, you know, Sebastian Vettel was back on form and he out-qualified Daniel, yet Daniel was the man who won the race.
Yeah, you kind of got the impression Vettel was happier. And like I say, he still beat him. I can't quite remember how he overtook him, actually. He was over pit stops, wasn't it?
That's it.
Yeah. But he actually beat him in a fight on the track. Not Vettel moaning about problems at the back. He was, took him on and beat him.
And credit to Sebastian. He seemed quite happy with what Daniel had done at the end of the race.
Yeah, surprisingly. it's not something we probably would have thought he would have said maybe 10 months ago, but it was surprising, really. I think the trouble with Vettel is this year's regulations and how the cars work and get set up just doesn't really suit him. I think it's a case of he's still trying to drive in his style he was last season, which clearly suited last season's cars. And I think if it had been last season, I think it would have been the other way around. It would have been Vettel who would have won the race and Ricciardo behind, but clearly this season suits more Ricciardo, really, which is interesting, you know, because you should sort of say that all great drivers are able to adapt to changes.
Yes.
So interesting.
Noticeably, he hasn't managed so far. We'll come on to Mercedes in a bit, but I suppose we're not kidding ourselves, are we? Red Bull are still a massive amount behind where Mercedes are.
Yeah, I mean, they were competing with Williams and Force India. And before Mercedes had their problems, they were 25 seconds ahead. They're still a long way away. Red Bull always come out and say that's one of their worst tracks, but I think they won there last year. I think Red Bull kind of like to, well, especially Christian Horner, sorry, especially likes to moan about Renault in sort of tracks where you need power. But yeah, it looks like a good car, but they just need that bit of extra horsepower from Renault.
They're not far off, I suppose, no. Are they? And maybe Vettel will be reasonably happy because the car is still probably the closest competitor to the Mercedes.
I mean, in my opinion, even though Red Bull won the race and actually got a reasonable result for once, I think it, in other ways, it was probably was quite embarrassing, because despite as Mercedes had problems when they were down on power and had braking issues, they could barely beat them, and it was only really down to the last lap that Ricciardo just tried, you know, an all out move and got him. But even then, he wasn't really able to pull a much of a gap on him. And I think, you know, with Mercedes, with power issues and braking issues, and they still can only just beat him, I think it's embarrassing for him, in my opinion.
Embarrassing win, there you go. We should just touch on, well, I'd like to touch on Ricciardo's move on Sergio Perez, which teed up the move on Rosberg. Yeah. I thought it was brilliant. I mean, Perez was possibly starting to have a few issues by that point, I'm not really sure, but the way he kept the car inside just on the track, I mean, literally his two inside wheels sort of clinging on to the white line. It was brilliant judgment.
Yeah, and I sort of he's been quick so far, but that's sort of shown another thing, part of his talent, you know, overtaking when, yeah, it probably wasn't a move that was there, probably he sort of made it himself. So yeah, still sort of looking another credit, another tick on Ricciardo's sort of list.
He's a bright, intelligent driver, isn't he?
Also, Martin Reynolds said it. Somebody in the Autosport magazine, he gave him a 4 out of 10 last year. Not sorry, that's actually 4 out of 10 in 2013. That's sort of how poor a race he had in Canada. And he's sort of saying how far he's come in a year. And especially, he was also a young driver coming up, and he expects to have quick races, the old quick race, but he's consistently there every time. So.
Yeah, I suppose all we need to do now is work out whether this is just a really good patch of good form, or whether this is genuine class that he's starting to deliver on.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Red Bull picked him over Vettel, you know, and I think a lot of people at the time would have sort of said they were pretty evenly matched, and either could have been in that seat, but I think a lot of people will be saying different now. A lot of people will be saying that they made the right decision.
Don't worry, I'll find my own way.
Here he is! I was waiting for you to your text.
I did call you.
But did you call the other phone? It didn't come through.
I called the phone that you text me from and said, let me know. I need to nip to the gents just for 2 seconds.
Well, Perry Hamilton's here.
Yeah, I'm just nipping to the gents. Don't worry.
He's just going to the toilet. So, which means we'll have a little break, because what we should do now is bring on the EDP F1 pit stops. Okay, then EDP F1 pit stops time. Ped's here. Hello, Ped.
Hello, I've made it.
As you know, because he came in late just a second ago. Well, the brief catch up then on these summary points that we've just discussed, because we obviously don't want you to miss out.
I'll give you like
debate.
A one word answer.
So, I don't want to make it too much of a challenge for you.
No, go on.
What a race, Canada.
Outstanding, always is. Absolutely love it.
10 more years of it as well.
Brilliant. Couldn't be better. It's one of the greatest tracks in the world.
Better race this year than Bahrain this year?
Oh, different race. Both hugely enjoyable, but both for different reasons.
All right, I'm not letting you have that. Which one was the better race?
I only managed to catch extended highlights of Canada, unfortunately. So okay. I'll have to say Bahrain, because I watched the whole thing. So by default, it's Bahrain. And that pains me to say it, because I love Canada to pieces.
That's fine. Mm. But you would have said Canada if you'd seen all of Canada.
I probably would have. But Canada consistently gives us really good races. Bahrain is normally a snooze fest. So Bahrain, because it raised its game.
Yeah, surprise factor.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you, Carl. Surprise factor. All right, Bahrain gets the nod.
That's good stuff. Daniel Ricciardo?
Cracking. Outstanding. Maiden victory. Deserves it. Drove really well. Kept his head when others around him lost theirs.
And he beat Seb when Seb was flying and out-qualified him.
Yep. Again, we're seeing some real pace from this guy. We're seeing it's not just the car, it's the driver.
Class or form?
Form at the moment. Form at the moment.
It's good work.
We should do the podcast.
Form at the moment. He needs more time to prove that it's class. But at the moment, it's form, and it's good form, and he can build on it. He really can.
Lovely. Well, we've stopped at the free practice paddock where Ped's just put his car together, which means we can now move on to Mercedes and have a proper discussion about Mercedes, shall we? Now, at the time, I'm not sure I really appreciated how good Nico Rosberg's drive was, but actually finishing in second with dub brakes. Was it that good a drive? I know James Allen on the BBC coverage, he thought it was one of the best drives he'd ever seen. He was going crazy about it.
It's hard for us to know, really, isn't it? I mean, I think it's only for really the engineers and Mercedes to know. I mean, we don't know how much he was doing behind the car and how much he had to adjust, really. I mean, it seemed pretty good. I thought he was quite lucky with Perez being second and having no tyres.
Or brakes. And himself.
So that kind of helped, because I think if Perez hadn't have been there, he might have dropped out fourth or fifth. But I thought it was okay. I mean, maybe I'm slightly biased.
Kyle's not impressed, I can tell. He's not really
the bit annoyed me was his when he ran on the chicane. That really annoys me.
Yeah, that was a bit naughty.
That was the fact he came out and said, well, I didn't get much of an advantage. I slowed down.
Six tenths of a second is a fairly solid advantage, mate. Especially it means you pull out that distance going into the second DRS zone. It's a heck of an advantage.
He kept his place, really.
Yeah, which I think is wrong anyway.
To be honest. I mean, he was a bit lucky, I suppose, that Hamilton's brakes failed first, because they both went at the same time on the cars, pretty much.
Yeah, it's interesting. It was all touted around on the radio and the team radio as your teammate has the same issue. It's not the same issue. It can't be the same issue if one car can retire and the other car can keep going. There must be a degree of, because we're not going to suddenly go, oh, Nico's that much better a driver than Hamilton that he can do it when Hamilton can't. I don't think there's a single person around this table that believes that. So I think they must be different. There must be some degree of damage that happened. Maybe something in Lewis's car triggered something else that Nico was lucky enough to avoid. I really don't know. But yeah, it's a cracking drive. Whenever a car isn't working correctly, it's an absolutely cracking drive. I mean, you think back to Senna when his car wouldn't come out of sixth gear or whatever it was, you know, and he came out almost collapsed. There are occasions where people have to do fantastic jobs of driving vehicles that aren't operating at a premium. I think Nico did that, but yeah, I don't think it's really fair to compare the two, even though they are the same car, same team. There must have been something different for Lewis to drop out when Nico stayed in.
He found buttons that he didn't know existed, apparently, Nico said. But the dramas are sort of coming back into Lewis's season now, aren't they? Monaco wasn't great for him, and he was getting things in his eye and all sorts. And this weekend he had the mechanical failure. There's only one car that seems to be attracting mechanical failure at the moment.
Yeah, I just find, I don't know so much about Hamilton, but the whole thing with Rosberg, I found the whole thing very suspect, if I'm honest, because after the end of the race, and since then, we've had nothing from Mercedes generally clarifying what the issue was. And it just seemed a bit strange that the moment Hamilton retired, they then radioed straight to Rosberg and said, rear brakes, move the bias forward to control it. You know, and surely with all of the sensors and everything, they would have known it was overheating. I mean, how many times over the years have we heard on the radio as engineers saying your rear or front brakes are overheating, do this, do that? You know, and immediately, as soon as the problem happened, they then radioed him and he was able to carry on. And then after the race, Rosberg said, well, it was difficult, but I put in 8 qualifying style laps. And I was thinking, well, the car can't have been that bad then. You know, clearly it was still slower because, I mean, compared to the start of the race when there was a good 25, 30 seconds. But I just found it whole very, very suspect. And yet again, it's Hamilton's car, isn't it?
Steve, you're not happy today, are you? Not happy.
No, it kind of cheesed me off a lot.
Well, it was interesting. I think they said that Nico's brake balance was naturally set up more front than rear, whereas Hamilton's was more rear, which may have meant that the problem came onto his car in a greater way initially anyway, and then they were able to salvage it.
Because Rosberg was asking about Hamilton's brake balance to the radio, wasn't he, early on in the race? He was quite frustrated at the time. He seemed a bit under pressure at the time. He was asking his engineers, oh, what balance is my teammate running? So, but yeah, it's just unlucky, really. If you run your car in a certain way, you don't expect the rear brakes to go.
I mean, I suppose my question really is, are we upset that there was a Mercedes failure? Because, admittedly, when both Mercedes are running at peak and you've got two cracking drivers in them, we're at the stage now where we are having great competitive battles at the front and great competitive battles in the middle, and even some good competitive battles towards the rear. That's more because teams like Sauber and your Lotus teams are dropping back, and they're having to battle with more backmarker teams. But we're still having good battles out of it. But with this situation in Canada, where the two front runners ended up having failures and having one of them retired, and it brought the rest of the pack up to them, did that make it... Were we actually kind of like, well, actually, I'm kind of glad that there's a chink in Mercedes' armour now, because it means that we can have this race where every... You know, you've got four or five people that could maybe have got into the lead and maybe have done it. And I think... Are we that concerned that there was a problem with Mercedes for this race?
Do we think it's a harbinger, or...? No, I think it needed it.
Yeah. I mean, but that's what I'm saying. Normally, at this point, if it was Seb scuttling off into the distance on his own, we'd be like, oh, everything's crap at the lead. But at the moment, it's not crap at the lead, because you've got Hamilton and Rosberg, and they are fighting each other tooth and nail all the way to the end of the laps, which is great. But I just think this was a nice little refresher. I think it was different.
I was going to say, at least we have a dominant car rather than a dominant driver this time. Yeah, it's a bit different. Sorry, Carl.
I was going to say, I'd rather the team actually caught up on speed.
Do it properly.
On their own merit.
Yeah.
Yeah, rather, yeah, other than...
But like I said, if they didn't have problems, Rosberg would have just won that by 20 seconds, and the last 20 laps of the race would have been boring, wouldn't they? So,
did anyone see Lewis and Nico's interview before the race?
When
Lewis leaned on Nico Rosberg?
I didn't.
That was brilliant. No. Yeah, it's brilliant.
Do you want to explain it, Carl?
They were doing this on the sort of parade lap beforehand, and they were being interviewed by the chap, I can't pronounce his name. Greek sounding name, whatever. Hamilton sort of put his arm on, they've both been interviewed at the same time, and Hamilton put his left arm on top of Rosberg's shoulder in like a buddy way. How's it going, buddy? And they were talking, and Rosberg, after about 5 seconds, sort of looked at him, sort of, what the hell are you doing?
Get off.
Dropped his shoulder.
It was a proper look at me, do that. It was a prop, but this is such a weird dynamic between these two, because I think now Lewis seems to be determined to prove that they're friends, whereas in that situation before a race, I think Nico was quite like, no, hang on, we're going into a race, don't. And but you wonder if Lewis was also doing this sort of arm up on Nico's shoulder to belittle him almost. He'd given his interview, and now it's like, off you go, your turn, Nico. You know, it's
just a bit of mind games.
Lewis knows what he's doing. I don't know if he has a real comprehension
I kind of imagine he's trying to make him appear to the, you know, to the world that the buddy's still and everything's fine. It's just a one-off weekend. But yeah, maybe Nico is. Yeah, doesn't see it that way.
Perhaps he was paid to do it.
I wouldn't have any. Fair enough, getting on well, but maybe not 2 hours before you're about to race. So I wouldn't necessarily expect teammates to go around hugging each other before.
there's also a picture of, I think it was Rosberg having a photo with, I think it was Paddy Lowe's daughter and somebody else, and Hamilton sort of photobombing it at the back, jumping up with his arms in the air. So I don't know if he was sort of on a weekend, let's be friends again.
Oh dear Lord. He needed to focus on his driving, I think, didn't he? Because he didn't take pole.
No, he didn't.
Which is a strange one. Okay, well, should we shift on to McLaren? Admittedly, because of a few things that happened elsewhere, it was a great race, really, for Jenson Button coming home fourth.
Yeah.
Sorry, Peb was just taking a picture, and I was trying to do it. Where's that going?
I'm going to tweet our own version of the Hamilton Rosberg arm on shoulder.
Oh, well, you see, I'm glad I asked now.
Yeah, that's going. It's going.
I did effectively give Ped the same look as Nico gave Lewis as well. I was like, what are you doing? I'm trying to work here. Anyway, McLaren. Yeah, Jensen. Good race in the end. I mean, it sort of fell for him, but...
Yeah, fourth. Probably their best result. It is their best result all season.
And this is the problem, I suppose, isn't it? Because you're like, oh, great race from McLaren, who managed to not still make the podium.
I'd like to see what actually happened in the last few laps, because Button was behind Hulkenberg.
Behind Hulkenberg,
Alonso, weren't they?
Thanks for that. That did my predictions well.
Apparently, there was a good little battle, and they're all over the place. Obviously, Massa and Perez were having their own little domestic.
Set two.
The result was good, but I think the pace is still a worry for them.
I mean, they're presumably behind, the front three. The front three of Red Bull and Mercedes, Ferrari, and then
are they still the slowest Mercedes engine car?
Well, that's just it, I suppose. We probably aren't they, because Williams showed better pace in qualifying, definitely.
Of course, Indy, yeah.
That's not good, is it?
That's dreadful, really, isn't it? For the size of the team,
second most successful team in Formula One.
Well, Jenson Button seemed very happy that things were going to move on in the right direction. over time, and everything that's going on in the background of Roking will sort everything out. So I'm sure we've been hearing that for a while now.
I don't think Button will win again in the McLaren
car.
It's probably a long term prediction for me.
Okay. As long as you can remember it. I like
but
it.
I don't think it's going to get any better in the next 18 months.
Did you, even with Honda coming in next year?
I don't think it'll get any better.
Do you think Jensen will be there next year?
I think he might be there next year, but I think it'll be there the year after.
Okay.
I don't.
Steve doesn't.
I think this will be his last season.
In Formula One?
Yeah.
Woof.
That's huge.
Are you having that as a prediction?
Yeah, I'll go for that.
All right, then. Yeah. That's two extra bonus predictions.
Huge. Okay. All right, Who's going to replace him at McLaren?
Alonso.
Yeah, I was going to say Alonso, but I was then just thinking about it before saying.
I don't see Alonso jumping to McLaren in the state that they're in now, especially not when they've got a brand new engine coming in. Just the guy wants to go to a winner.
Ferrari's not really that much better, though, is it?
No, that's true. I'm not necessarily saying he's going to stay at Ferrari, but I'm saying he's either going to go to a team that's on the rise and looks really like they've got a lot of performance, so possibly a Williams seat if Massa doesn't stick around after this year. They're looking really strong. I think McLaren would be a big shout for Alonso.
Get Hülkenberg in there.
Get Hülkenberg in there somewhere.
A couple of other little Jensen points. He did a VT with David Coulthard for the BBC before the race. I can't remember if it was on the qualifying show or the day show. This VT started by David Coulthard coming into Jensen Button's written press conference and saying, "Sorry, Jensen's got to go now. We've got to go and do something." And then they went off in this milk float. Now, I really hope that's staged, because it really annoyed me, because if I'd been sitting there to do my written media press and all of a sudden he's whisked off to do a BBC VT, I'd be like, don't think so. But there you go.
That's Michael J. Bailey standing up to the powers of the BBC.
I imagine that.
That's what that is.
I mean, David Coulthard would have said, who are you? But that's irrelevant.
I'm Michael J. Bailey, the hero of Archon.
The prince of the... Oh, dear. The principle of the thing. I didn't like it.
I haven't watched any BBC coverage, but... Conta, it doesn't seem to...
Well, I do.
I try to avoid it.
It just so happens that it was a BBC VT. Okay. But then they redeemed themselves because Jensen was driving this sort of milk float buggy thing they get around the track on. Touched on the brakes. David Coulthard went flying through the front windscreen, which wasn't really a windscreen. Just went flying out of the buggy. And Jensen was like, "Oh my God, are you all right?" It's priceless banter.
Seatbelts, people. It was seatbelt mess up his white jeans.
It was great work. Marussia, I feel like we should touch on, because he had a great weekend last time out, of course, in Monaco. Best ever, clearly, by a country mile. And then, wow. Now, there are 2 points here. One, they were very quick in qualifying. They were a second ahead of Caterham, who were nowhere near them. And they were properly on top of the midfield, Marussia. And you're like, wow, this, you don't normally see form and confidence reflected in times in Formula One. But this time it was like, well, yeah, they've had points, they've just kicked on. And then they kicked into each other, and that was that in the race. So,
hubris. They were tugging on Superman's cape too much. No, it's a real shame for them, actually. And it is just those things, and you really hope that they can carry on past that and actually continue the momentum they had in Monaco through to Austria, because you just don't want to see that go by the wayside.
Well, it's obviously got some pace back.
Also, Max out qualified Bianchi.
He did.
Yeah,
so but. He then the first didn't time finish. That Max failed to finish.
That's
he
right.
He didn't start like too bad.
The week I said that Max Chilton would be the last classified finisher, he decided not to finish. That was good of him, wasn't it? In about 50 million races. Classic Chilton there. Whose fault was it? Because they both kind of... Max Chilton wasn't particularly happy with Jules.
Chilton got the penalty, didn't he?
Yeah.
But Chilton said that it was... Yeah, blamed each other.
I think it looked more sort of 50-50, really. I think they were both taking a line that was neither wrong or right, but they just kind of came together. I don't think they were really aware of each other there. I think you could blame as one as much as you could the other. I think,
is it at this point in time where we go to the classic line of, it's a racing incident?
Yeah, but they don't exist anymore, do they? Everything has to have a blame, which brings me nicely on to Sergio Perez and Felipe Massa's incident, which Perez was penalised for retrospectively. I can't remember what the penalty was.
Five
place grid penalty for Austria. I mean, I thought it was very similar. I thought you just, Sergio was battling with some issues, I don't know if there was a major coming together. They were just trying to sort themselves out, really. And
it kind of looked like Massa turned a little bit right, maybe to the corner anyway. Yeah. Perez turned a little bit left, but nothing too...
It's possibly a kind of thing of like Massa's realised he's not going to make it, goes back to the sort of racing line. Perez thinks Massa's going to have a go, goes to cover the inside line. Perez is just sharper on the brakes and Massa's going to run into the back.
But that has to be a racing incident, surely?
Yeah, well, exactly. It's an incident happened on the racetrack. I don't think there was anyone really to blame. You couldn't necessarily say you were out of line. I'm just devastated that it didn't clatter into Seb Vettel and take him off.
Well, jeez. Jeez. I mean, it was. I have to say, the more you watch it, the more it's remarkable. Wasn't collected.
Yeah,
and also, I mean, it was a really bad accident. You get accidents where you're like, oh my goodness, look at that, that's crazy. Oh, he'll be right. And then you get ones where you're like, and it was a really bad one, wasn't it?
I think on Sky's coverage, Martin Brundle had a very, very good way of saying it. He said, with Sergio Perez's car, he said that car came to a stop very quickly. Because, I mean, the way that the gravel traps are designed and the tyres are designed, they're meant to bounce you into them and bounce you off them, but keep that speed so that you don't just come to a dead halt. But somehow, Checo's car just straight into the barrier and just stopped dead. And, at least Massa had a little bit of time to spin and reduce some speed before hitting the barrier. I mean, he still hit pretty hard. Very hard.
But they're both okay. Which is obviously great.
There is that concern, isn't there, to begin with? Like, as soon as you see that and you think, oh God, I hope they're all right.
Well, you just want to see them get out of the car.
They both had their previous accidents. Perez had a big one in Monaco, didn't he?
Exactly. And Rob Smedley is misguided, we learnt as well, because he claimed that Sergio Perez should have retired the car. Because it wasn't the issues were terminal, effectively, he said. That was what Sergio Perez made out a few laps earlier.
I'd like to see Felipe Massa in third position struggling with his car, and Rob Smedley comes over the radio a couple of laps ago, yeah, pull in now, Felipe, you know.
Yeah.
You're a danger to everybody else.
Misguided indeed then. Misguided indeed. Okay, then, the usual gents discussion time of the weekend. Let's have a driver of the weekend. Now, I've got written here Nico Rosberg, but after we spoke about that earlier, I don't think anyone's going to agree with me. Obviously not convinced it was that good a drive. So,
I'm actually going to go first. I jump in.
Go on, Steve.
I'm actually going to say Massa, even though he didn't finish the race.
Okay.
I actually think he had a pretty solid drive all the way through. Probably wasn't noticed until the end when people were probably like, oh, hang on. You know, and he, I think towards the end of the race, I think he seemed the quickest guy on the track, really.
It was he got up to that lead group, didn't he? And everyone's like, oh, he's only got five laps, he could win this. And then he just couldn't get past.
That'd have been 10 laps before, and someone else hadn't have whacked into him, they could have done it.
I kind of feel he could have done a bit more in the last few laps.
He sort of got stuck, didn't he?
Yeah. He kind of needed to do it straight away.
And there was one opportunity where I thought he could have gone for it, and he just completely backed out of it.
That's why he's not a world champion.
Well, it did make me think. It's like, oh, I'm not sure, you know, Massa 10 or 8, 6 years ago would have backed out of that. Okay, so we've got Massa, Rosberg, any more bids?
Ricciardo.
I think I'll agree with Kyle on that. If it's your first victory in Formula 1, and a good drive as well, because it wasn't just because the two... Mercedes retired. He was quick. He was quicker than his team. He was quicker than everyone else. And he made a good passing move to get round as well when we weren't really expecting it at that point.
The move on Perez.
Yeah, it was exactly it. And he did what needed to be done. He had a cracking drive, not just getting on the top step, but I think he had a really, really good drive anyway. If he'd have landed that car anywhere on the podium this weekend, he'd have still got driver of the weekend for me with that drive.
Kyle's nodding.
Yeah.
Goat of the weekend, then... or summarily called Pastor Maldonado of the weekend. I mean, he didn't finish again, so you can give it to him if you want, but that would be a bit cruel.
Wasn't his fault, though.
No, it wasn't his fault this time. I was going to give it to the TV director because some of the shots, they just kept scooting away to the crowd at the hairpin while someone was overtaking to watch the crowd. I don't want to watch the crowd's reaction. I want to see what the actual cars are doing.
That's a good point, actually, because I was screaming at the TV a lot of the time. Yes. I was sort of like, well, something's about to happen here, and you're looking at the...
Yeah.
It's shocking stuff. It wasn't the only time. They kept doing it as well. There was another point where a couple of cars were about to come into the shot and overtake, and whoever the director was, focused on the back of the racing. It's like, no, follow the action.
Yeah, there was one point when Rosberg and Hamilton were battling, and they just heard that they were struggling with the power units, and then they sort of half a second apart, and they, you know, they go away. Like, yeah, it's just battle for the lead.
And also, you knew Ricciardo was close. I feel wrong calling him that now, and it's getting really annoying because I want to stick to it. You knew Ricciardo was closing in on Rosberg, yet they didn't cut to it until the moment he had his DRS flap in to overtake him. So there was no drama there. It was like, oh, now he's going to overtake him. Anyway, any more?
Either Marussia driver. I mean, you know, it's a pretty solid mistake. If you're gonna crash, take out someone else. Don't take out your teammate.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? Like, it's that kind of thing. Obviously, when you're crashing, you're a passenger. You've got no control over that. But still, come on, guys. It's not the hardest first corner in the world in terms of racing tracks. So, yeah.
Caterham had an awful weekend. Yeah. Must be said as well.
Kimi and Ferrari. Kimi's spin at the hairpin.
Oh,
Michael.
Whoops. Schoolboy stuff. You can get away with that in rally driving. Team of the weekend?
It's a tough one, though.
Got to give it to the Bulls, haven't you?
I think so.
Got to give it to the Bulls. They've two cars on the podium. When was the last time they did that and looked competitive? Yeah. You know, I mean, okay, it took a mechanical failure for them to get there, but as I said, Ricciardo looked strong all weekend. Seb does what Seb does, you know, he's put it on the podium. So two cars on the podium for them when they didn't look threatening at all, and especially Canada is not traditionally their track.
They are best of the rest. That's the thing. The
they
closest
are. They did.
Agree. Steve?
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then that leaves highlights of the weekend. I'll suggest Ricciardo's pass on Perez because I was like, yes. And it was just the way he kept the car on the track. It was not only making it, but making sure the car stayed on the track because he only just managed it.
I think it was his pass on Rosberg.
Yeah.
Because then it meant another 7 points was
put in favour. That's true. Love it. You can have that, Steve. Yeah. That's fine. Kyle?
We already spoke about it. I thought Hamilton Rosberg pre race
lean.
Yes.
Which you'll be able to see a reconstruction of on Twitter.
Yeah, the tweet's up. Check it out right now. Check it out. Follow at PedHD56.
And we'll retweet it on the EDPA.
We will.
F1.
It'll all be tweeted.
Account as well. Highlight?
I just love Canada, man. I love the whole race. I love everything about it. It was action packed. It was great. I mean, watching Felipe's charge was always enjoyable. I got a soft spot for Williams. I got a soft spot for Felipe. So seeing that almost come to a really good thing for him was nice. But it just showed that he's got pace. It showed that he's still, to an extent, relevant. And I don't think a lot of people thought that when he moved to Williams. So it's nice to see Felipe on the charge.
What a lovely thing to say. Right, I reckon that rounds up this Canada roundup then. You can get hold of us in the usual ways. There's my column and this podcast. You'll find those at edp24.co.uk/F1. And there is the EDP F1 Twitter feed as well, which is imaginatively titled at EDP F1. That's the handle. Ped, you mentioned yours. Do you want to do it again?
Yeah, at PedHD56.
Where you can find great content, including that picture. Kyle?
At KCumbers.
Steve's still not on Twitter. We never had an Ask Steve, did we?
No,
once again, hashtag Ask Steve to Ped or to the EDP account. And we'll get those questions to Steve. You can tell how angry and controversial he is. Just imagine the questions you can ask him. And you can get me on at Michael J. Bailey. We are done. Thanks all for listening. Thank you, guys. Much appreciated. We'll be back in a few days, or however long it takes me to edit it, with our look ahead to the next Grand Prix in Austria. It's not Australia. It's Austria. Who knew? Until then, bye for now.